I'm the kind of guy who look at the macro events that happen and the causes. And a lot of people can say the last 4 years have been just turmoil and divisiveness and everything. But out of that, we have become, as a world, as a nation particularly, more aware of racial issues. We've become more aware of compassion issues. We've become more aware of healthcare issues. We've become more aware of these things because finally they bubbled at the top and said, hell, if you haven't taken a hint yet, I'm going to put it right in your face.
Well said.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the producer, and I'm here with Clay Boykin, the founder of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. Hello, Clay. Introduce our guest, please.
Hi, Dennis. I'm happy to. Brett Williams is with us this afternoon. I've known Brett for a few years through church.
Have you?
And
Which church is this?
Unity Church of the Hills.
Ah.
And so I'm going to pick up right there and say, Brett, we haven't talked in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I think we were actually face-to-face was probably there before COVID, right?
Oh, at least a year ago.
At least a year ago. So can you catch us up on what's been going on, where you're at right now, and where are you headed?
Exactly, because the spiritual, Brett, the spiritual, you know, we're looking at the IQ and the EQ of people, and then we're looking at the SQ, which is the spiritual intelligence, which is purpose. And how do we connect with that, especially as we're, all three of us have been, had some experience in New Thought. I came from, as a child, as a Christian Science, and then went up through both Unity and Science of Mind. And I know Clay has been up through Unity and what we're doing. So can you give us some perspective on both what's been going on with your pastorship, but in your life?
Sure, sure. Well, it's a wonderful subject to be talking about finding your purpose and spiritual purpose of your life. I think that the last 3 years particularly had demonstrated the power of that in my life. I grew up as a Methodist as a child, but always had the burning questions of why? Why am I here? Who am I? What's my purpose? How could the only child of God be put into a desert land 2,000 years ago when they didn't have mass communication? You know, it's just these intriguing questions. And I was very fortunate as a young adult in business. I was introduced, it was a sales trainer of all people who introduced me to New Thought, handed me a couple of books and said, here, read these. These will open your mind, new perspective. And exploded to that. And so, but that I never really fully embraced it. It was always there for me, waiting patiently for me to hear the call. And we moved to the part of town where my wife and I live in now. We're empty nesters, having raised three wonderful boys. We decided to find a church to. We just felt like it was time for us to go back to church and to reacquaint ourselves with a community of good people. And so as we, and Clay knows this, right across the street from Unity Church of the Hills is Bethany United Methodist, mm-hmm. a big, beautiful church, and we went there for several weeks, but every time we left the parking lot, I would see the Unity Arch across the road. I kept telling Cindy, I said, I really want to go there. I want to try it. And we walked in the front door, and I think that first Sunday we realized that we were home.
Yeah.
Spiritually. And
how old were your sons at the time, Brett?
Oh, this was only 2 or 3 years ago. So our sons are now 35, 32, and 29.
Wonderful, because that's one of the things that we're going to want to talk about as the evolution of men and males and this in this journey of compassion. Because what I now tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth or words in your story. Is that there was an element of softening or something that was going on when you looked over at that unit. Something was going on inside your soul that said you said yes.
Yeah, I think it had been with me for almost all my life. I remember as a 12-year-old imagining, feeling that there was a higher consciousness. that there's some higher consciousness that, now, visually, I imagined it as this big zipper across the sky, that at some point the zipper was going to unzip and there would be two parents, not my earthly parents, but two parents saying, okay, it's time for you to come up here. And because that what you're in is just, is not real, is not the reality. This is the reality. So it's always been with me all my life, but it was just that calling to come underneath that arch across the street and go into that. And I don't know if as much as a softening as just a, you know, I'd come to a point in my life, I had just lost a kidney due to cancer. And but again, I don't feel that was necessarily a trigger. Oh, I have to go find God now. But it was just a confluence of events that, why did we move across town to Northwest Austin? We were in South Austin, a beautiful little home. Why did we move to Northwest Austin? We moved there, so we go to Bethany. And Bethany, again, going there, triggered those questions again, because the Methodist theology didn't answer the questions. It didn't resolve the burning questions that I had. And so it really fired me up to say, damn it, I want to know the answers. And so going across the street began that journey. I remember my first visit with the pastor there, who's a very dear friend of mine this day. And I said, how do I go to the next level? What do I do? And he just said, here, read this book, do this. And he guided me gently and forward. And so within a few months, I was the communication director there at the church. Yep. It was kind of a part-time position, but certainly worked full-time hours. And it was a love interest of mine. And then toward the end of last year, some things happened and changed. And I again asked that question, what's my purpose? And the minute I asked that question, within a couple of days, I got an email from this church in Lake Travis that said, our congregation wants you to be our pastor. And I said, I'm not a trained minister. I'm not even a licensed UD teacher. What the heck? But I'd spoken in there once and had volunteered some at time to help them fix up their church, but they just felt a connection. And it's been a year-long, amazing spiritual journey. Who would have known that a pastor wet behind the ears would have had to deal with a pandemic and taking a church virtual and negotiating out of their lease from their present building and still dealing with that and now being faced with pastoral care? We just had a congregant we learned yesterday who's transitioned. And dealing with all of that has been an amazing growth for me and certainly has taught me more about compassion and love than anything I could have read. You know, the experience, living the experience of having to be that kind of compassionate person is better than anything you could read, any workshops you could attend.
Brett, let me ask you, you've done this over this year. Mm-hmm. You also kept a business going, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, we've had a business. We do e-commerce consulting. We teach people how to succeed in e-commerce. But even that, we felt that was something, even though we've been in for 25 years, it was something that afforded us a lifestyle and helped us raise kids, but it never was that kind of burning, passionate thing. The thing I enjoyed the most out was when I really did get to teach people. Mm-hmm. And so out of all this, because of the pandemic, now it's just interesting how these events come along, and I joke with the congregation, I call them coinkadinks, but I don't believe anything's coincidental. But as these things transpired, now, why did they choose me? They had other ministers and LUTs they could have really persuaded to join them,
sure,
to be their pastor. And why did they pick me? Well, because we had this pandemic and they needed to go virtual. And as we went virtual, we began asking the questions, what do we need to do virtually to, well, now that we're virtual, that means we can reach anybody. And what kind of things can we build that will reach more and more people to bring, because there's people out there in apartments and houses that are alone, that are lonely, they're asking questions, they're desperate for a spiritual connection. And so out of that, you know, we felt a calling to build what's called Project One Network, which is launching in January. And it's going to be a global community network of communities, of classes, of courses, of workshops, of events, to bring people around from all spiritual backgrounds to be able to connect together. And you know, and so we're reaching out to people like Clay, particularly because I know him, to bring into that network his knowledge and to build a course and structure around helping men particularly become more compassionate males, because they want to. I feel that most men want to.
Exactly.
They just don't. They need that guidance.
I love that. I love what you're saying. What you're saying, and when you look at your sons, mm-hmm. and you look, because you have three sons, and one of the things that we talk about, right, Clay, is that it's not the gender specific. It's our aspects. That's why you called it the new compassionate male.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, yeah. When I first started out, I was thinking, well, you know, the new compassionate man. Mm-hmm. Well, when am I going to get that defined? Mm-hmm. And as soon as I get that defined, I can write a book.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's really not man. It's male. It's the male, divine male energy that goes across the spectrum. Yeah. And I don't have the answer. And that's why I'm in search of. So I'm in search of the new compassionate male.
Well, we're all in search of it, but I think it's new in the sense that we're working to define it and to enhance it. But I have to say that I was really blessed with being raised by a compassionate male. Now he was by all appearances, the typical Texan. I'm a third generation Texan, by the way.
I can hear it in your voice there. You can sometimes. I loved how you dropped into it when you said it. You just kind of like, yeah.
Well, now I got to ask before you go on. Is this West Texas?
Yeah, I grew up. I was born near Lubbock, and that's when we talked about it. People in West Texas don't move their teeth when they talk because the sand will blow in there. The sand blows in there, and that's why they talk like this. Now you go to East Texas, and they'll open their mouth and talk. You know,
how they will.
Right, that's right. But if you go over in West Texas, it's talking like this because I don't want that sand to blow in my mouth. Yeah, so
you were talking about your compassionate, to be able to, because I love the fact that all of us got touched by men who were either walking compassionate or were having that aspect of it, whether or not we picked it up or not, but you happened to get that.
I did, and I didn't realize it until much later. I used to think that, and my mother, I love her to death. She's transitioned. My dad's 89. We're spending Thanksgiving with him. But I used to think that they would argue a lot. And that always bothered me growing up. I couldn't imagine why they were arguing. And after talking to him after mother passed on, what I discovered was that I said, how did you put up with all that? How did you put up with all that arguing? And she's always nagging, you know, and the kind of thing. He says, you have to understand your mother had a really horrible childhood. She grew up passed around grandparents because her parents were divorced. Her mother married twice. Her dad married twice. And she grew up when she was a little girl, 5 years old. They were sent out to live with grandparents that lived in a dirt poor farm in Oklahoma, wood floors, no electricity, no running water. And because she was 1 year younger than her older sister, but she was chubby, they would just rail on her and beat her with a cotton stick and switch. Yeah. And she had to grow up with all that. And so he said, I just understood that she needed me to love her and just be there for her. And I thought, oh, my God, it makes me cry now to think about it. And I've always been that way with Cindy. I think that although people might look at it and say, well, you kind of had traditional roles. You went out and worked and she raised the kids. And I said, well, I made sure that was her choice.
Thank you.
That's what she wanted. I didn't tell her, you stay home and cook and clean and wash the clothes. I said, what do you want to do? And she says, I want to raise our kids.
Yeah.
And then after they got up to a certain age, she came to work for me in the business. And we have worked, her desk is right here next to mine.
Mm-hmm.
She's not here now, but we've worked like this for the last 20 years. And so we were there every day when the kids came home from school and we went to all their ball games and everything. And I have to tell you, all three boys have grown up to be very compassionate, supportive males. I just love the fact that they're so respective of their mates, as well as women in general, and as well as other males. But
wonderful.
And my youngest and his wife met at West Point. You know, he was military, but such a compassionate young man. And
that touches me so deeply, Brett, because the thing that we're seeing, because we're talking to a lot of women and men around, and the idea of the patriarchy, it being something that is a hierarchy, mm-hmm. top down. Mm-hmm. Male-led. The world is so interconnected and interdependent, as you have seen in e-commerce. Mm-hmm. You know, you turn a tiny little dial over here, and this one turns. Right. Everything is interconnected and interdependent. That cannot survive in a top-down hierarchical methodology, which the patriarchy is based on.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think as a, you know, even despite the rhetoric of the last election and everything, and still the divisiveness in this country, I think that slowly but surely, we're developing into more compassionate people. I mean, I have to admit, I was a Republican most of my life. I ran Republican campaigns here in Austin in the early 90s. I was staunch, you know, but I think through my spiritual studies, particularly, mm-hmm. and just the spiritual awareness of compassion and love for one another, I certainly have more liberal leanings than I have in the past. Simply, and I don't wear that on a sleeve or anything, it's just that I understand that love is what's going to grow this world. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not that kind of, I have to win, so you have to lose so I can win, and that kind of thing. We can all win.
That's right.
We can all win.
Yeah.
And it's a tough, tough lesson, and particularly, and I think, you know, again, I look for, I'm the kind of guy who look at the macro events that happen and the causes. And a lot of people can say the last 4 years have been just turmoil and divisiveness and everything. But out of that, we have become, as a world, as a nation particularly, more aware of racial issues. We've become mm-hmm. more aware of compassion issues. We've become more aware of healthcare issues. We've become more aware of these things because finally they bubbled at the top and said, hell, if you haven't taken a hint yet, I'm going to put it right in your face.
Let's...
you know?
So true.
Well said. It is. I agree. And it has a, you know, the thing that I'm interested in is that how do we heal, especially when you come out? I also come from the center left. I'm very much of a, I believe in conscious capitalism, mm-hmm. that there is the bottom line can have more than just red and black.
Oh, absolutely.
It can have a rainbow of colors on it that can allow us to say that, you know, how do we be a good corporate citizen? What is our contract mm-hmm. with our community in order to be able to be part of this, to raise us? So you know, you see me really well seated in the center, mm-hmm. center left, wanting to make sure our things are taken care of and well run. And all. How do we re-engage, especially since how do we re-engage the right so that those of us who want to see this compassionate, I mean, I see so much of the conservative principles that I admire, you know, of taking care of the land, of taking care of making sure that infrastructure is good for everyone to be able to use. And how do we re-engage that, do you think, Brett?
I think one of the examples, my mother-in-law and my dad both are like Fox News-aholics. For some reason, their generation really likes that. I don't know why. But one of the things that I noticed with my mother-in-law and others who were on the far right was they would, you know, they're getting this railing about the Portland protest all the time on TV. Portland's going to hell in a handbasket. Now, actually, it was one little square block in downtown Portland, but right. It's not like the whole West Coast was burning up. But all of that until there was those moms that interlinked their arms and stood together and said, look, we're not here for violence. We're moms. We're going to stand here in unity as moms. And that, for a moment, I could see it in a lot of the people I met. It made them, whoa, this is not about violence. No, it's not about violence. These are moms that are up there and saying, you got to, you know, look, you want to tear gas me? Go right ahead. I'm here. I think that it's more and more of those examples. We need not confront anger with anger. You know, it's the proverbial turn the other cheek. And there's a lot of metaphysics to just that saying, but it's the idea that we're not going to respond to your anger with anger. We're going to respond to your anger with love. And it's a very tough thing to do. Our gut reaction is when somebody hits us in the face to hit them back. And particularly in the male psyche, that's so difficult to override. And it's really, we need to just love them back and understand. And we need to understand, this is where compassion comes into play. Compassion is not, and I think some people make the mistake that compassion is just letting, is just saying, okay, well, you're who you are. Okay. No, that's not compassion. Compassion is saying, why are you who you are? I want to respect why you are who you are. Why are you on the right? Why are you claiming that this candidate who's a racist and says all these things, why is that your guy or gal? Why is that on your, why? And learn from that. Well, what is the pain? What is it that you're trying to relieve that you feel is, you know, are you afraid of immigrants? Are you afraid of losing your job? Or what is the fear? Now let's work together to resolve that fear, to resolve that for you. And that takes action that we don't see a lot of at the national level necessarily, or at the public level, but it's something that each one of us can do.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. I just heard not more than 10 or 15 minutes ago that you're starting an international global community to address exactly that.
Well, to help with that, we hope so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the idea is that we want people to come together and share their spiritual journeys. One of the things that I think all of us sometimes, and I did this for 40 years, I'm going to take this spiritual journey by myself. And it didn't get very far. It wasn't until I went into Unity Church of the Hills, which wasn't the first Unity Church that we'd ever visited. We'd been to many, but never had really found a connection. But in that particular one, to find somebody that says, look, come join us here. We'll show you. Oh, and go to the Course in Miracles class. You'll love those people. And we just fell in love with them. It was a group of 10 or 12 people and just fell in love with them. Went to Clay's Monday night circle of men. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I would go away at night sometimes crying. It was just so impactful just to hear these men just lay bare their souls. Yeah. And realize that there is, you know, where two or more of you are gathered in my name, so shall I be there. Mm-hmm. There's such power in the connectiveness, because we all are, I believe we are all the one child of God. We're individualized expressions of that Christness, of that child of God. And so we built Project One Network to do that, to help people come together as one interconnected network of spiritual seekers. We call our members seekers. They're looking, mm-hmm. they're on their journey. They're seeking for that, to recognize and embrace their own divinity. And we're going to have, you know, groups of Methodists. We'll have a group of Catholics. We'll have groups of Unity people. We'll have groups of all kinds coming in there. But we don't want them to stay segmented. We want them to share and interlock. And it'll give people the freedom that, okay, so I'm a Baptist, but wow, there's this metaphysics class over here. I've always wondered about the metaphysical interpretation of the Gospels. I can take that and still go to my Baptist church. Mm-hmm. But it's going to help expand my mind, hopefully. And it may help me proceed on my spiritual journey in a way that I'm not quite yet fulfilled where I am. And so we're really excited about it. We're very excited about it.
Wow.
is such a profound mission statement and an opportunity to be able to use the tools, this tool of being connected around the world. I would think about, you know, like, let's say back in the 1980s, if you wanted to get an idea like this off the ground, what would it have taken before the internet?
Well, on the internet, of course, the internet wasn't around in 1980, but it would have been, you would have had to do like a cable. Well, no, even cable TV wasn't around in 1980. So you would have done it, well, so the Unity Movement is actually our blueprint for this. And in the early 1900s, in late 1800s, the Unity Movement grew as a publishing company. They published a monthly magazine, multiple pamphlets, and they had writers from all around the world that contributed to it, and then they sent it out to their hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And that and the subscribers would take it, and they would form little groups, and they would get together and study it and talk about it. And then later when radio came about in the 20s, then they started a radio station to connect to even more people. But it all centered on the small interconnected groups of people who shared the ideas from other groups and other people from around the world. We're taking that same model, but using the technology of today to do that rather than the technology of 120 years ago.
How exciting. And what I love about that is that you're going to see leaders emerge rather than it being the top down, okay, well, we're all going to go to Brett and make sure that he gives the okay before we do anything. You actually are going to be able to see it grow organically, the trust that you're putting in people, because you're trusting that place in them that we all reside.
I think people will rise to the occasion of their calling. If they're given the opportunity and encouraged to just be still and know thyself, then they will rise to the occasion. Just as I did with this pastorship. You know, someone will invite you, will trigger you and say, you know, you're really good at meditation. You might want to do a class on that. And that person, if they'll listen, will either hear a yay or nay. But when they hear that yay, we want to, our job, you're right, that they all shouldn't come to Brett for the, you know, but we want to facilitate them with the technology and the tools and support to make them succeed at their calling.
You know, I was, when you were talking about not top down, one thing that I've learned in my collaboration with the Charter for Compassion, I was invited to work with the women and girls sector and actually became part of their leadership team because they understood what I was doing with the circle of men that I've got going. And I'd never heard this term before, but their way of thinking about it is creating a constellation.
Hmm. Wow. I like that.
Yeah. And I thought back to my Motorola days and the old Iridium program where they have, I guess, 66 satellites around the world that's doing all the, you know, and it works. You know, no one satellite controls things.
Well, that's the very nature of the internet, too.
That's exactly right.
Thank you. Self-repairing.
It is. I often wonder if, because we think about what artificial intelligence, and I love the idea that when artificial intelligence wakes up, it'll go, who are you calling artificial? But the idea of that, would we even recognize it? Like, for example, if Wikipedia was alive, because it's being fed, it's constantly being fed, it's being taken care of, but if it had developed a consciousness, how would we even recognize it?
That's a very good question. That's, wow. I was just thinking about artificial intelligence earlier today, actually. So another coinkadink. To me, artificial intelligence will always be that tool which takes a known set of variables or data points and then make a decision based on those data points. That's really what artificial intelligence is. It says, I have all these inputs around me. I have all this base of information. So to make it, so here's the decision I make based on those data sets. Higher consciousness, though, our consciousness that we all share, works on a macro level that exceeds all time and space continuum. And there's no way that artificial intelligence will ever be able to achieve that. I mean, just like all the events that have led all through my life to this very moment in time, to where I am right now, I can't imagine any machine ever having the capacity of 61 years ago of saying, based on these inputs of this little town in Texas and his parents and where his parents could go and their background and their personalities and all that happens and blah, 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 and the weather changes and blah, blah, that this is where Brett's going to be 61 years later.
Nope. That's where the reductionistic cannot work. We do not live in a reductionistic world. We live in a synergistic world where we live in a world of where the quantum field, this wonderful soup, brings into reality by observing, by creating. It's this wonderful. It just takes my breath away. I'm so glad. It's lovely to hear you say that, Brett.
Now, what we also have that artificial intelligence can't duplicate is our co-creative ability with a higher consciousness. So I can assume things to be real that will be real at another time in the future. I already know that Project One will be a very successful global network because I am assuming that as the power of a child of God. So I know that that's going to happen. The artificial intelligence computer can't guarantee that.
So this is the power of intention, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Where we sit down and we understand that that is an actual power.
Oh, it's an actual
power. It's an actual, as I can't see the wind, but if I go outside, I can feel the effects of it.
Well, magnetism is a great example of law. We can't see it, but we certainly see its effects. Neville Goddard, which has a wonderful book, I'm going to be developing a course based on it called The Power of Awareness. He calls it the law of assumption, the law of intention, law of assumption. In Unity, they call it the law of mind action.
Sure.
It's that idea that, and it's based on the truth that asking you shall receive, seeking you shall find, knock and it will be open to you.
Yep.
And it's a powerful, powerful law. And artificial intelligence, I just don't see that being at that level. I can't see any man-made tool possibly competing with the power of what God has created.
Yeah, I think that you put a really great word in there, Brett, that I loved you using, is the word competing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it isn't competing, what if it were collaborating with?
Well, that's what
it actually ends up being great. Part of our part of this healing process, that it actually becomes a tool in this process that becomes part of the divine unfoldment.
Well, you just said the key word there, that's tool. I mean, anything that we create in this reality is really a tool that helps us. Whether it's artificial intelligence now or it was the Gutenberg Bible in the 17th century or the 16th century, it's a tool that we've developed to help us on our spiritual journeys. Ultimately, that's what all this is about. We don't always recognize that. We don't recognize that the iPhone is here perhaps to help us on our spiritual journey, but I promise you, I love being able to write, when I'm writing my talks, be able to go to the Bible app real quick and grab a quote and put that in there, or to search the iBooks for a new thought book to read for this evening or something and have that download and have that available to me. I mean, the tools these tools can be made available to us for good or bad, but hopefully, ultimately, I think we create everything for good. No one goes to work with the idea that I'm going to make something that I know is going to hurt a lot of people. You know, now we could argue gun makers perhaps, but that's really not the intention of the guy that's going there and grinding the metal to make the barrel. No. He's there because he wants to take care of his family, and he wants to afford college for his kids. And I mean, there's goodness to what everybody really wants to do, you know, certainly. And people who don't do good, it's because they haven't been loved. And the more people we can love, I think the less crime we'll have, the more problems we'll have. But, and I'm really happy to see that now more and more men are not afraid to use the, that four-letter word.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's so, that's one of the things that, you know, Clay, you and I talk about this a lot, is that when we were growing up, and you're the kid of, of our bunch, I'm 72, you're 61, and Clay's 66. But when we were growing up, there was a very strong cultural identity as to what a man was. Oh, sure. And we would look inside of ourselves and say, well, how do I measure up in that sense to something that is unlivable up to, because it did not really even exist. It only existed in a two-dimensional page or on a screen. And so that's what's so lovely about now, is that we have a plethora of wonderful role models.
We do.
That we can see that is much more than they were very defined roles when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. 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 We saw that all the time growing up, and you know, my dad, I remember, It wasn't that many years ago that we would end the phone call and he'd say, "I love you." I mean, that was only in the last 10 years.
Wow.
Out of an 89-year lifespan, out of 60 years with me, finally in my 50s, he started to tell me he loved me. Now, I never doubted for the fact that he loved me all my life. But to hear him do that, that was pretty remarkable. That was pretty remarkable.
Gosh, I'm thinking there's not a day go by that I don't in some way think about my parents, but mostly my dad. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm modeling after him. Mm-hmm. Either I'm modeling, say, this is the example to be like him, mm-hmm. or let's be a little bit different.
Well, right.
That's kind of the marker, mm-hmm. you know, the guidepost to say, well, which way do I go on this and that? Mm-hmm. And much the very same. I never questioned whether Dad loved us four kids or not. Mm-hmm. You know? I can't remember ever hearing him say that to me.
Dad was always kind of quiet and he worked really hard, but he worked a job in banking and stuff, and he really didn't like it that much. He really liked carpentry, but he gave that up when he got married and had kids because he didn't think he could make a living doing that. But as he grew up, you know, when we would go back to the little town in Texas that I was born in, we didn't grow up there, but racism was rampant, I mean, in Texas in the 60s. I mean, I remember my grandmother putting me in the car one day, and she said, "I got to go over to N Town and pick up something." And that was the north side of town. That's the N word. Dad never did use that word. He never disparaged anybody. In fact, he was known as the banker in the little town we grew up in, mm-hmm. South Texas, as the one banker that would make loans to the other side of town, the Hispanic side of town. And they loved him for it. But he told me one day,
thrived because of it.
Huh?
And they thrived because of it.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it made him feel good. I mean, it thrived in his heart. Financially, not so much, because you just didn't make loans over there. I mean, people didn't, you know, but they loved him for it. But I remember one day he said, you know, I was in high school, and he said, "I have to tell you, I don't know how I'd react if you brought home a black girl to dinner." He said, "Because the way I was raised, that was a no-no."
Yep.
But he said, "I made a decision when you and your brother were born that I was not going to pass that on to you." But he said, I can't tell you honestly how to react, because he said, that's how I was raised. But he said, I just want you to know, I would never want you to feel bad or feel uncomfortable if you were, you know, if you, so I just didn't want you to be raised that way. And so I have a great deal of respect for my dad, because he worked really hard to, and he was in one of the first integrated troops in Korea, by the way. As a matter of fact, when Truman integrated the troops, he was one of the first to go in with a African-American trucking company. And he tells some amazing stories about that. But he just, he always felt, he said, I've always known it was stupid. It was short-sighted and ignorant to be racist. But he said, I just wanted you to know that, I still have, you know, I still battle with that, because that's how I was raised, but I didn't want you to battle with it. And I said, thank you for that.
I love that you say that. So much of what you say is so rich, the conversation, Brett. But when I look at my, I have conscious and unconscious biases.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That I constantly, this is what we're talking about in Search of the New Compassionate Male, is a willingness to look inside myself and to say, wait a minute, I have biases that I don't even know are there. Am I willing to look with them? Am I willing to sit with them? Am I willing to write about them and to journal and to ask others and to work and to be able to go there? Because that's, compassion softens all that, that allows me to get access to it.
I think once you surface it, then it will soften. And that's the biggest challenge anyone has, I think, on a true spiritual journey, is that bringing those shadows, bringing the light on the shadows. Shadows cannot exist when light is shining on them. And so, but it's one, first thing, it's hard for us necessarily to recognize those shadows. Sometimes we don't even know they exist, but they're there. And second, it's also hard to admit that you have the shadow and to bring it up and go, wow, really? I think that way? That can't be me, you know? It's shining light on those. And I've done a lot of that over my life. And it's not pretty sometimes. I remember, and when I grew up in the little town I grew up in, you grew up homophobic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just, that little schoolyard, no. If there was a kid in school that was even suspected of being homosexual, boy, you didn't want to be their friend. You didn't want to be, you know, it was, they got the run into the bad stick all the time.
It was a very hard, even... I, who grew up, my mother in the theater, who had so many gay friends, even I remember so clearly, there's this movie called Death Trap, and Christopher Reeve was like my hero.
Love that movie.
And my hero, and he and Michael Caine, and I'm sitting there in the theater, and I think I'm this enlightened person. I'm sitting there, and I see Superman, Christopher Reeve, kiss Michael Caine on the lips. You should have, I felt inside of me, I went, oh my God, I had no idea. I thought I was this enlightened person.
My bias has even changed in the last few years about that too. I don't feel uncomfortable around it at all anymore.
It's amazing. I watched on Glee, because my evolution in this Glee, I watched the two, Kurt and I watched them get married, and I watched them kiss, a passionate kiss, and I actually felt inside, oh, isn't that romantic? And I went, wow, that is the evolution, that you go from an evolution of just absolute revulsion. Mm-hmm. To seeing when it's exactly the same thing.
You know, you bring up a good word, and that's evolution. And we think of our evolution macrally as a people, as a humankind. But one of the things that, and probably the most challenging thing, and I teach this often from the pulpit, is that we individuals are not stuck with the way we were born or the way we were yesterday. What where we are right now is what we choose to be. And we can evolve constantly, but it can be in small steps. It doesn't have to be wholesale tomorrow that you're all of a sudden, you know, the Mother Teresa. But if you recognize that the way you are right this minute doesn't have to be anything like you were the minute before. That's actually quite liberating. It's quite free.
God, that's beautiful.
You know, Brett, I think it was before you had come over to UCOH, to our church. Mm-hmm. I was going through my dark night of the soul. I went, joined there. I can tell you it was about 9:20 in the morning on January 3rd, 2010, that I walked into that foyer the first time. And like you, I felt like I'd come home. Mm-hmm. And that energy never left. And a lot of healing, a lot of people that are going through healing there. And of course, I, you know, sitting there like the next person, you know, sometimes we cry. I mean, because we're healing.
Oh, yeah. I was crying.
And of course, you know, I'm sitting there and Reverend Steve, one day he got to this one place and he said, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I don't have to build a condo there." And I slapped my forehead and laughed out loud, you know, everybody looked at me, but it was at that moment that I realized I have choice.
You do. Yeah.
I can walk out of this thing. I can change my life. But you know, it took a funny twist on a Bible verse to get through to me.
You know, that's the most amazing thing about all this to me, mm-hmm. is that, and why we're very excited about the organic growth possibilities of Project One, because there is no one path that fits mm-hmm. every person. Every person today, right at this very microsecond, everyone's at a different level of consciousness, a different level of awareness, a different level of their of understanding or connection to their divinity. And not ever, and for some people, just the ability to go into to move into a state of joy and happiness is a huge step for them. You know, we don't need to be teaching them how to be one with the divine at the highest level of consciousness if they can't even wake up and be thankful for the day.
And you people where they are. Okay. And all right. So this is I'm going to bring this up to a wrap, and I'm going to invite the audience to come to the after party, because there will be an after party with Clay and Brett that is going to continue after Dennis is long gone. The old man has to leave. So I'm going to bring this episode of In Search of a New Compassionate Male, Having Met a New Friend, Brett Williams. I'm sorry, I've already glommed onto you, so you know, get used to it. And knowing this beautiful man that I love, Clay, and we're going to look forward to getting y'all to see another episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. We'll see you next time.
No sweat.
Yeah,
it's all good.
Well, how's the project coming for your January rollout?
Well, I think we're fine. In fact, I was just one of the tasks I was going to do today, coinkadink, was send you an email and see if you had kind of thought through what kind of initial course you want to develop, or what were you thinking you wanted to do?
Gosh, there's two or three things. One is, very simply taking something from my book, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Circles of Men, and having that as a guide for anyone who's wanting to start a men's circle. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole population of men out there that are not going to join a group, they're not going to go into the traditional group. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not joiners like that, and they need a safe space to go to. And, at one time or another, I believe almost every man is in that boat.
Oh, gosh.
And there's a whole population out there. And that's who I'm speaking to. You know, there's the other kinds of men's groups that serve a purpose, and I think of them as more of the outside-in approach, mm-hmm. where ours is contemplative, ours is more the inside-out. You know, it coming aware that where men can come together in a safe environment there, where they're not judged or someone tries to fix them, and to be nurtured. You don't hear that the same thing.
You're really right about the inside versus the outside. This isn't like the, what was that big men's group that had the Marino rallies, the 90s?
Well, there's several different models. You know, one was the Robert Bly model, the mythopoetic model, and the Jungian model, and then the mass movement. Right. Yeah. And they all serve a certain purpose.
Sure.
To get through. You know, there's the traditional, I think of as more like the Knights of Columbus, you know, and of course there's always the neo-pagan model where they're, you know, running naked in the woods, and hybrids of all those. But the one that you don't see is the integrative reflective model. Exactly. That's what we're doing. Because that's what I needed. And the fact that I didn't trust men, and I came to this place where, like, for me to grow, mm-hmm. I've got to figure this out, and I've got to figure it out with another man. And that, I believe, is the work that call men together to do that in that environment.
Could you create a program, a course, a self-study course, called In Search of the Compassionate Male, to help someone ask those questions of themselves and begin exploring their own compassionate selves and stuff? Do you think that's possible?
I've kind of like the fish in water, you know, asking what water is. I know I'm somewhere. And I know I'm on to something here because the feedback that I'm getting.
Oh, you're on to something big, Clay. And that's why I want to share it with so many people. And that's what we're all about. We know that there's a lot of great people out there, like yourself, who have great messages to get out and who can really inspire and help people. We want to be the facilitator for that.